This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
It's that time, Prior Faithful. Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Where does the time go from the unknown of April to the uncertainties of May, the swoons of June, the fry of July, the August of charging into the playoffs, and now September? Here we are at the end of the regular season, our last regular season roundtable. Welcome in to our one-hour commercial-free Padres Roundtable presented by Roundtable Pizza. We got a little bit of a different crew today with the Gwen and Chris show not represented, but we still have Annie Halbrun at the end. Hi, Annie. We have Stephen Woods. Hello, Woodsy.
Hello, Ben.
Craig Elston in the middle.
The fry of July.
Four hours of this every day.
August.
Magnifique of May.
I was starting. I kind of had an idea of an idea.
I had a concept of a plan
of how I wanted it, and it just didn't really pay off. And making his roundtable debut,
the rookie
executive producer and imaging director, Paul Reindel. Paulie. What did they con you into doing?
I know.
Get you out at this roundtable today.
You know, for 5 months now, I've heard Woodsy complaining every Thursday about having to do an extra hour with Ben Higgins, and now you know why.
Did they promise you free pizza today? For special? Did they promise you free pizza today?
Oh, yeah. Okay. All the pizza and wings and salad.
Well, we have to figure out at the end of the year when we cut up the roundtable share how much Paulie gets.
Postseason share?
It's going to be tough. The postseason share, it's mostly going to be split between Ben and Woods and Annie and Elston. I think we've all been here for most of them, so.
Yeah, was there an elimination? Was the Gwen and Chris show eliminated?
Yeah, was there some challenge?
It's gone. Yes, they have been eliminated. All right, let's start just with some thoughts on the last 2 days in Los Angeles. The clinching, obviously, on Monday, and then the tough loss on Tuesday and then Wednesday. I can't even keep my days straight. Annie, obviously, the high of highs and a little bit of a disappointment last night. Your just overall thoughts on the Padres-Dodgers so far?
I think it was great, obviously, to see them clinch and that relief for them, too. Just kind of like, we made it. We know we're in. No matter what, we're going to be in the postseason. They definitely earned it this year. And then last night, look, I think that they played a hard-fought game. I think they tried to win that one. It didn't happen. But the thing about them is, even if they don't get the division, they're still going to fall to what looks to be a good wild card spot and be in the wild card and be in the postseason, so they're still going to get their chance.
Craig, anything in particular that you saw the last couple of days, added observations?
Well, you know, I really think this is a very constructive week for the Padres front office and coaching staff, because this is the playoff before the playoff. It's a playoff without death, you know, and that's why I called it the fun playoff this week. And so you get to learn things. I think yesterday you learned what Dylan Cease would look like in a first playoff start of his career. And maybe now he gets that out of his way, and he gets to pitch that first playoff start like it's his second playoff start. I think you've also seen L.A. is a really good team that's improved from the last time that we saw them, and facing them in the playoffs will be a tough task if it comes together.
Woods, you kind of made the point that Dylan Cease seemed a little amped in that game yesterday. He's only, I believe, had one career playoff start and lost it, pitching for the White Sox. You don't get a ton of opportunities there. Craig has a good point that maybe just a little chance to get rid of some of the jitters before it really truly becomes an elimination situation.
Yeah, I mean, you're really, it's a cool opportunity that you get to go up against, because there's other teams that are in it right now that don't have anything really to play for. And, you know, you wonder how it's going to affect them when the games get ratcheted up. And, yeah, I think I like how you put it, but it wasn't fun. It hasn't been fun watching either of those games, I'll tell you that. And it's not really, when the game starts, I'm good. It's the 14 hours of waiting for the game to start every day that's been killing me, and I've rearranged things and organized things, just trying to kill time.
It's an extra half hour even from 6:40 to 7:10. I'm like, all right, come on.
When the sun goes down, you're like, okay, it's midnight. Can we start this game now? But man, I, you know, Dylan Cease, you watch him throw, and you're like, Lord, like the AB, you know, when he got Ohtani. Masterclass, and you know that's in him, and you know his stuff is so nasty. And same with Michael King, I think probably battled more through his five innings, but you know, had a better result. But like he didn't have the best stuff last night. Dylan's stuff last night was nasty. He just couldn't really corral it. But it's been fun. I mean, it's been cool. It's good practice.
You stopped right short of fun.
Yeah, I stopped short of fun.
And Paulie, I would say that if there's one thing the last couple of days that we saw is that even in 2022, there was a thought that the Padres needed to slay the dragon, that the Dodgers were the dragon. I don't know that they're the dragon anymore. Now I feel like it's too equally matched good teams going up against each other. You're not the big underdog against the Dodgers that you have been for the last decade. Now, they're still a really good team, as Craig pointed out.
They're still a dragon in the sense of World Series favorites, billion-dollar roster, MVP after MVP after MVP in their lineup. I mean, they are still a dragon, maybe not so much in the San Diego to L.A. Way that it's been in the past for pretty much forever, because you've clearly shown that you can beat these guys. Whether you want to say you're the better team head to head, you are. The San Diego Padres are the better team head to head this year. And I watched that game last night and the game on Tuesday night, and I go, either one of those games was one pitch away from going the other direction. Coin flip game. That's an October type baseball atmosphere.
Craig, I mean, financially, the gap has never been bigger after the moves of the last offseason, but do you feel like the Padres, talent-wise, have actually closed the gap on the Dodgers this year?
Yeah, I mean, there isn't a team in baseball that can close the gap on the top three guys in the lineup. That's one of the top threes in the history of the sport. You know, one thing I think we do in San Diego, and it's natural because it's kind of a tribal thing, is we downplay L.A., and it's almost kind of a big brother, little brother, like, no, you're not so tough. You know, like, L.A.'s lineup is better than it used to be. There's no question in my mind that Edmund, Lux, and Rojas in the 7-8-9, from a pesky standpoint, that stands up to Cronenworth, Solano, and the catcher. It might be a little bit better. Yeah. It might be a little bit better. That bullpen is just one, you know, slider slinging 99 mile an hour throwing guy after another. They brought up the kid from the minors. He throws 101.
104.
Yeah. He only got to 101. Yeah.
Ohtani hits a leadoff, and how many times in two games already has he come up with a chance to do damage with runners on?
It's crazy. 100%.
The bottom of their lineup has been really setting the table for him.
Now, the one differentiator is the rotation, because the Dodgers' great rotation is on the injured list, and the Padres' rotation is here. So I do think in a long series that could be a playoff advantage between the two teams. Otherwise, I think they're both very good teams.
You do get the sense in a long playoff series that it's a seven gamer. I mean, you really get the sense when you watch those two teams play each other. Yeah, this is going seven. You know, and a true war of attrition between these two teams. And you know, we have a little bit of an advantage there based on the fact that we have four, even five healthy starters if need be.
Annie, do you feel like the Padres have closed the gap, or is this a function of, hey, the Padres are having a magical season, Dodgers have been riddled by pitching injuries, and they're still perhaps, you know, a ways to go between the two teams?
I don't know about a ways. I mean, I think they're getting closer. Like, the head-to-head series, obviously, that makes a difference. But I agree in the sense that, remember when the Giants took the division from the Dodgers, but then that was one year, right? And the Dodgers came right back and did it again and again and again. And if the Padres don't take the division this year, like, factually, you're just going to look at a piece of paper and say, look, the Dodgers took the division again, right? So they still remain, I think, the team that you have to go through, the team that you have to beat. I don't see them because they had a rough season this year, being like, we're just going to fall apart next year. You know, they're not that kind of organization, right? So I think that you're closing the gap. You're definitely establishing yourself as a presence. But until you do it, and they did it in 2022, until you can kind of do it consistently or win the division, it's still going to be, I think, theirs to have.
Yeah, their rough season is 96 wins or whatever.
It literally leads the major leagues in win percentage. Yeah, they have the best win percentage.
Right.
Rough season.
That's their rough year.
All right, Padres are doing a great job. I mean,
they
no doubt about
no
it.
No question.
Yeah.
It's our 97.3 The Padres Roundtable, the Fan Padres Roundtable, presented by Roundtable Pizza. We are 158 games in. Collectively, this group has probably missed, what, a handful of those games. So we can put the best educated guess as just about anyone on these last four, how they're going to play out, Paulie. The Padres could still win the division. Going to need some help from the Colorado Rockies to do so. Absolutely, we'll have to win the game tonight. Obviously, the wild card is looking is good for home field advantage. How do you see the last four playing out here?
I was thinking about that. I'm looking at the next four games, and in my head, I've got 3-1 for the Padres. I think they win tonight, and I think you absolutely can take 2 out of 3 over the weekend. Now, it just comes down to what else happens around baseball and how many of these games over the weekend matter. Is it going to be an opportunity to bench some guys? That obviously could come into play, and maybe you go 2-2 instead of 3-1. But absolutely, 2 of 3 from the Diamondbacks is more like that should be expected for this Padres team. And I think they win tonight with Musgrove going up against Buehler.
Annie, I think the math obviously works heavily against the Padres at this point. Yet, there's some part of me that says Coors Field is always just would be the funniest thing ever for the Dodgers to go into Coors Field and all of a sudden can't win a game when they go up against those Rockies and Charlie Blackman's retirement. And I'm not giving up 100% hope here that the Padres could still
win. Would
you not
be a wreck right now if the Padres had to go to
We'd be sick to our stomachs.
Absolutely.
Sick, 100%.
Baseball is weird. Strange things happen all the time. I think it's asking a lot, but is it impossible? No. And until they're mathematically eliminated, you know, we've seen all kinds of things happen this year that they haven't done since 2010 or since 2001 or whatnot. So who's to say that things don't fall their way again in this situation? But certainly, too, my understanding, right, is that if they win 2 of the next 4, they lock the top wild card spot as well, right?
So no matter what happens.
No matter what
happens.
Yeah.
So you kind of have that as your, I think, measuring stick. You've got to get there no matter what. Yep. And then, you know, maybe get a little hope your way and continue to win. And maybe you get the division.
Or you even win 1 of 4 and the Mets lose 1 of 5. And you still wrap up home field advantage. Padres are in really good shape for that. Now, tonight, of course, again, must win if you want to stay alive in the division. The Dodgers clinch if you don't. And Woods, we talked about it on our show. Paulie brought up the stat. Joe Musgrove has never beaten the Dodgers. I was not aware of that. That surprised me. I mean, do you feel like that's a concern going into this game?
No, I'm not concerned about it. It just means he's due. Just like Mookie Betts is probably due, and just like Luis Arraez is probably due. These are really good baseball players that have made a lot of money in their careers by not letting things like that matter or weigh them down and force them out of the game. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. There's no time like the present. It's not how you start. It's how you finish. All of those things. All of those sports media cliches. Yeah, man, Joe's got the best stuff that he's had in a long time. I mean, he looks as locked in as he's ever been. And as far as them going to Colorado, you know, they've used Knack. They use Flaherty. They'll use Buehler tonight. They're going to go Yamamoto, and then what? You know,
TBD, Yamamoto, and then TBD again, I think.
Those guys need to figure out a way to, Shohei Ohtani could hit a 600-foot home run in Coors Field.
Will
hit a 600-foot home run in Coors Field, but that place sucks. We all know it sucks. It's the worst to play in. I would not want to be in their shoes right now. I really wouldn't. And especially if they lose tonight, I would really not want to be in their shoes.
Craig, you'll take the emotion out of it. I mean, what do you see for these last four?
Well, you know, I don't believe the Padres should exit playoff mode, which is what I thought they entered on Tuesday, trying to win every single game. Tonight, the goal should be very simple. Don't let them clinch in front of your face.
Correct.
And if you can push it to Friday, then the goal should be to force the Dodgers to win their series in Colorado. And if they win their series, they win the division. And so be it. They've earned it. But I just don't want to see the club kind of side saddle in. 2-2 is the bare minimum that I'm looking for out of this four-game set.
We talked about it a little bit last week, and the the red hot Mets, you might want to try to dodge them. Chris Sale, you don't really want to face him in a short series, and we all kind of thought, if you have to play someone, maybe it's the Arizona Diamondbacks. This ongoing drama with the Mets, Braves, rainouts, and doubleheader possibility on Monday changes things quite a bit in my mind. If you haven't seen the story, postponements in the last two games in Major League Baseball, preparing to play a doubleheader on Monday, and then likely sending one or both teams onto a wild card game the next day on Tuesday in a another part of the country. So, Annie, does this change anything about who the Padres would want to face? Would you rather face a Mets team coming off a doubleheader on a Monday, having used all their pitching, although they've been really hot? Or are you still like, just give us the Diamondbacks, even though they may be rested and ready to go by Tuesday?
No, if you're the Padres, you want whatever team is playing that doubleheader and getting in the playoffs and having to fly that night, probably across the country, and play an early playoff game, what's likely going to be an earlier playoff game the next day, and have a completely blown out pitching staff. This is good for the Padres. I personally don't think the Padres need it. I think that they can take on a team that has a day off before, and I don't think it's good for baseball. I think it's a bad look for baseball. But if you're the Padres, are you going to take it? Sure, it can't hurt, right?
Craig, you're kind of nodding. I mean, it's a no-win situation for baseball. You've got to keep the safety of people in the Atlanta area in mind. You've got to keep the sanctity of home field advantage and competitiveness for the Braves and having the opportunity to play those important games in their home stadium.
Major League Baseball's biggest error was letting the teams figure this out. They should have just stepped 100%. In and said, this is what's happened.
That is it.
Deal with it.
That is it. Best interests of baseball clause. That's why you have a commissioner. But the Major League Baseball stopped having a commissioner decades ago when Bud Selig became the commissioner, and the role turned from commissioner to lackey.
Babysitter.
And 100%. And the lackey of Rob Manfred just let the Atlanta gatekeepers and bean counters, take control of this. It's ridiculous. This series should be being played right now, whether it's at Lone Depot Park in Miami, whether it's in St. Petersburg. And, of course, that's an area where they could have gone west. They could have gone somewhere, all right? There's a place that they could have gone to play. They could have gone to Globe Life Field where they played the whole postseason in 2020. The Rangers were on the road. That's it. That's the call. The Rangers are in Oakland. They could have gone to Texas and played and had no problem. It's a complete and utter disaster. And
could have come to Petco Park.
Yeah, they could.
Padres aren't here, and one of them probably has to end up here anyway.
Yeah, fair enough. That's a good idea.
I mean,
you just stay. Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Now, cynically, the Padres play a huge role in this. If they really want to, if they really wanted to have the Mets or the Braves come to town, then they have an opportunity to do that by just pushing the Diamondbacks down, by beating them. Also, they could lose to the Diamondbacks.
But you also, so this is really next level. But you need to keep the Diamondbacks in it long enough to force that doubleheader to have to be played. Because the commissioner's office has said, if both teams have already clinched, if the Padres win out and the Diamondbacks are eliminated, they don't even need to play that. And then you've set yourself up against having to face either the Mets or the Braves without having to play that doubleheader, maybe having to face Sale, probably having to face Nola and Wheeler in the first two games. You almost definitely have to keep the Diamondbacks in it to force that game between the games between the Mets and the Braves on Monday. I mean, it's like we're like a tanking situation this weekend.
No, the baseball gods are listening to you loud and clear.
You don't tempt fate.
They just tuned in and they were like, you had my attention, now you have my curiosity. That's what they are saying to you right now. No, in fact, the Royals could make a whole decision of this by beating the Braves this weekend. The Brewers could take the Mets out of this by sweeping them this weekend. There's plenty of variables, and the Padres just need to win their ball games to stay sharp.
And what's ultimately for the Padres, it feels like a day-to-day situation. You can only see what your situation is after every single day, and then you make your lineup decisions and your pitching decisions accordingly based on the next day and where you are and what's still available to you.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much that's how a baseball season works, even though we live and die with each pitch. But I think you do have to be smart. I would like to see some guys maybe get a rest, get a reset. You know, some guys that are scuffling a little bit, the Luis Arraez of the world, the Donovan Solanos a little bit, get a little breather. Not tonight. Tonight I want to see our very best, what we've got. But, you know, it rarely works out the way you think it's going to. Like, oh, man, if we could just blow this guy out, then we can use Alec Jacob for four innings and we don't have to use our high-leverage guys. And it never works that way. You know, it never does. The games it's supposed to. The games against the White Sox where we're like, just put up 12 runs and get Crony in there, get him some innings. And no, man, those games were three hard-fought games. Those guys played their asses off and took you to the wire, you know, in a couple of them. So it never works out the way we think it's going to. So they've been really good about preparation, being ready, having guys ready, giving guys breathers when they need it. Nothing changes. We've talked to Schilte enough to know he's preparing. He prepares every game the exact same way. So I'm excited, man. Four games left to see what actually shakes out, not just for us, but the entirety of these teams. It's going to be really fun.
And it's so unlikely. It's like so unlikely based on everything we've seen from this Padres team. But there is this tiny, tiny scenario that if things don't go well for the Padres these next 4 days, they have to wait on Monday to find out who they're flying to play. So, I mean, no, none of us in this room expect that to happen. I probably no one listening. But you see how it does have like this ripple effect.
Well, if we learn anything from this series, you know, Joe Davis be our teacher. It's not a matter of if Shohei's going to come to the plate. It's a matter of what's going to be on the plate when he gets there. Well, there was a 1% chance that they hit into a triple play, and lo and behold, look what happened. Let Joe Davis be your teacher, okay? And never assume anything about this game or the outcomes or what you think may happen. Yeah. It was a great lesson.
I think 1% might be absurdly high.
It might be absurdly high.
It's way high.
This again really simply to baseball is stupid. And I think just
boils it down pretty
follow that.
It does, yeah.
Pretty well, actually.
But also, like, I promise you this. He will never make that comment again on the airwaves. Yeah. Never. Because that was a possibility. He didn't even think about it being a possibility. Lo and behold, baseball comes down and you know, pops
humbles
you one.
You.
Yeah, humbles you every time.
It's our 90.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I. com.
87.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by Roundtable Pizza. It is pizza royalty, and I know we've already, on this roundtable a couple of times, discussed a possible Padres playoff rotation. But as we get a little bit closer and, you know, the specifics start to gel a little bit, I wanted to throw out a very likely scenario. If the Padres have already clinched home field advantage by Sunday, which would be Michael King's next turn in the rotation, fully expect they're going to skip him and not use him for a meaningless game on Sunday, which would have him very rested and ready to go if you wanted to use him on Tuesday in the opener. How much consideration do the Padres give to starting Michael King instead of Dylan Cease in game one? And Paulie, why don't we start with you? How do you consider using Michael King? Is it a piggyback situation with like a Yu Darvish, one of the other pitchers who is not going to be in that starting rotation, or do you just go immediately to high leverage relievers after Michael King is usually more of a 5-6 inning guy?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm thinking about what Eno Saris told us this morning. He said Dylan Cease is, like, you could not convince him otherwise. That is his game one starter, and it's hard to argue with that. I kind of like Joe Musgrove maybe getting game one if everything worked out that way. Look, it comes down to who are you playing, the matchups and all that. I just don't know how you could go. You know, we talk about it all the time for like a manager, for Mike Schilt. You have to make the moves, make the decisions that you can best explain and cover your own butt with. And I think that if you were to leave out Cease, Musgrove, or Darvish and things don't go well for you in that three-game series,
tough one to answer.
We're going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? I think Michael King has relief experience, and he's probably the best suited to come out of the bullpen, whether it's game two, if you drop game one and you know, Cease or King or, you know, whoever is starting game two. If they don't have it right away, go to King then. If it comes down to game three, it's all hands on deck. King will come out of the bullpen at that point. But I just don't know how you leave Darvish, Cease, or Musgrove out of a start in a three-game series.
I kind of thought that that was the case as well, that King made the most sense as a bullpen guy. But if they do need Darvish here on Friday or Saturday, I don't know, his next scheduled is Saturday, I think.
Yeah.
If they needed him on Saturday, that could make the decision pretty easy in that you just got King, Cease, King, and Musgrove, you know, healthy and ready to go for the series, and those are your starters. I mean, how do you see this working out?
And then Darvish is your hopeful game one division series starter. I think that
Darvish would be so nasty out of the bullpen, though, in a game three if you needed him.
I mean, I think this is a very, very difficult situation because it's on the margin. There's an argument to be made on both sides, and for the Padres, they have to figure out on the margin what's better for them. And what I think the margin is, how much do they think Yu Darvish could contribute in a bullpen situation versus how much they think Michael King could contribute in a bullpen situation versus our overall rankings from the beginning of who we think are our best three starters. Because I tell you what, before Tuesday, I think I was right there in lockstep with Paulie saying we're going to go Cease game one, Musgrove and Darvish as their rotation turn comes up. It would have been Darvish for game three on 4 days rest. And King goes to the bullpen. And then I saw King throw, saying he doesn't have his good stuff.
Yeah.
A full count, one of the dirtiest pitches I've ever seen to strike out Shohei Ohtani.
Nasty.
Now, the umpire called it a ball.
Yep.
But that was one of the dirtiest pitches I've ever seen. Situationally, execution-wise, King can handle the ball in a playoff situation, and he's got the second best stuff on the team. So him starting is great for this team.
And I don't think I honestly, Paulie, and I thought about what you said, and I kind of agreed with you before we talked about it in here. Like, that's the way it's always been. I'm gonna go Darvish, you know, Cease, Musgrove, or some iteration of, because, well, that's the way we've always done it in baseball. But I think Michael King, you know, as valuable as he can be out of the pen, you know, we talked to him. He really wants a playoff start, seems to be ready for the occasion. Times out pretty well for him to start a game one. And I can't see anyone in the media or anywhere going, how could you possibly go with Michael King there? How could you possibly do that? It's pretty easy to justify if you're Mike Schilt and A.J. Preller and the holistic creators of the rotation. Yeah, why wouldn't we? He's been fantastic for us, and his stuff is nasty. Any matchups against whoever it may be, I think he cover your ass pretty easily there.
This conversation's kind of turned into how do we get Michael King into a game. I think the better framing is who gives you the best possible chance to win game one.
Right.
Because then if you do win game one, you open up a lot more possibilities.
Oh, yeah.
Then it's a pretty easy call. You're
Cease and King in game one. There you go.
Your dream, obviously, is just play two games, right? You need two starters. Right, that's the dream.
Right,
and
2 days off.
And do we have the team and the horses and the bullets to do it? Yeah, we do. We absolutely do. And so that is obviously the dream scenario, which doesn't really feel like a dream. It feels like it could be a possibility, no matter who we play. But you know, they got to hit too. They got to hit. It's not just about the pitching in October, and they got to play defense, which they don't do for Michael King for whatever reason. But he always finds a way to kind of wriggle out of it, minimize the damage, and minimization in the playoffs. I mean, they've done a pretty good job at minimizing this series so far, and that's a playoff team they're facing. So they continue to do that, they're going to win.
And Annie, I kind of agree with Woods in that there are no wrong decisions here. You can't go with anyone and really open yourself up to criticism, because there's a great argument for all of those guys to get postseason starts and innings.
And, I mean, there's other teams, right? The Dodgers, probably even the Diamondbacks, that would love to have this kind of problem right now that the Padres are having. And I see it both ways for sure. I think that you do go with Cease, and hopefully he did get some of those kind of whatever wobbles that he had yesterday out of the way, right? And I do think you go with Joe Musgrove. For me, I also say Darvish, but you could go either way. I mean, Michael King's earned it. I do think playoff experience is valuable, that you've, you know, if you've already had the playoff experience, but also you got to get it at some point,
yeah,
no matter what.
Right. Yeah,
and maybe you do throw King out there, and then that way you know for the division series, or supposing you get there,
if you,
you can depend on him.
To win a World Series, you're going to need all four of those guys to pitch really well at some point. So
you got to get him the experience.
But and I don't know how much you can manage looking ahead, following, well, that's what are the Brewers doing against the Phillies, and it looks like we're going to match up with them, and this is a better matchup for us. It's it, you really have to, it's live and die each day. What do I got to do to win today's ball game? We'll figure the rest out tomorrow. But with four really quality starters, you are afforded a little bit more of a luxury if you're the San Diego
and
Padres.
For that wild card game, I think that they could very well piggyback guys.
Absolutely. Yeah,
right. If someone's not doing well, just okay. We got someone else ready to
that,
go.
That leash gets real, real tight, and it gets real, real short. Come next Tuesday.
Well, and what makes it so tough for us is because it's not just a seniority thing. Oh, well, you have to start Darvish,
right?
Musgrove's from San Diego, so obviously he has to get a start. They're all pitching really well,
yeah. Right?
Like Darvish, for as much time as he missed, has looked really good in September,
yep.
And he's gotten better and better with each start. So it's not, you're not just giving it to him because he's the veteran, you know, future Hall of Fame Yu Darvish. It's no, he's earned it as
he's
well.
Earned
he's
it as
pitching
well.
Really
yeah.
well.
Certainly better than, I don't know, the last couple of times out where you were throwing a lot of pitchers in the playoffs because you had no other alternative, whether it's Mike Clevenger or Craig Stammen.
The four-run lead that Clev blew.
Feathers.
Yeah.
Four runs in the first. Four runs, and you're like, bro, just literally like give up a run here, though. Let's get to the bullpen. No. I mean, it was 4-4.
And they gave Manaea the lead, and then he tanked it,
too. And then they tanked it, too.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by Roundtable Pizza. It is pizza royalty. One of my favorite moments of the champagne-soaked celebration on Tuesday night was when Manny Machado grabbed a phone and had Ha-Sung Kim on FaceTime in Arizona, where he's continuing his work rehabbing, and celebrated, "We love you," said it in Korean, repeated it, was very excited to see him. Now, reading between the lines a little bit, if they really thought that Ha-Sung Kim probably wasn't going to come back, he would have been with the team celebrating. That tells me that Ha-Sung Kim is getting really close, and they want to maximize his chance of returning and being able to contribute for the Padres in the playoffs. That's just my kind of my logical leap on this one. So if Ha-Sung turn, Paul, how do you work him back onto the team? Is he the starting shortstop? Is he the starting second baseman, leaving Xander Bogaerts at short and moving Jake Cronenworth likely to first base? Or is he a platoon second baseman with Jake Cronenworth with lefties and righties and letting matchups dictate your postseason decisions?
So I think defensively, it's not a hot take here that Ha-Sung Kim is the better shortstop defensively, but I really fall into the camp of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And the team has played really well over the last 6 weeks. I think you, without him getting really any game time, I mean, he's going to get some complex games or whatever, low-level games going, I'm sure, but without getting like acclimated to the major league speed again, I think you have to ease him in, and if that's a platoon situation, you play the matchups. I wouldn't tinker a ton with what they've been running out there.
Or Annie, I will add, even a bench piece is a possibility if he is brought back to the roster.
Yeah, because there's things that we don't know, right? Will he be 100%? How will he feel? How will he be able to use just like health-wise? I think you keep Xander where he is. Look, he hasn't been getting reps at second base since he's moved over to shortstop. He is the only player, you know, when we're out there watching the pregame drills, the only like main superstar starter that's out there doing drills every single day to get work at shortstop while everyone else is resting their legs because it's September and you're not doing that kind of thing this time of the year. But he's had to do it to try to get himself better at shortstop to be able to make this move for the Padres and be the team guy. They had a move in spring training, had a move now. Don't, in my opinion, you don't have a move again. You leave him there and let that work. You ride or die with it, in my opinion.
Even though, and I think I tend to agree. I mean, I was at Oracle a couple of weeks ago and was pretty surprised watching batting practice, watching the violent hacks of Ha-Sung Kim in the batting cage at Oracle. And I was like, that's Kimmy. And he is taking absolutely violent hacks in this batting cage. For him, I think it's an issue of can he throw the ball across the diamond. Are you guys nervous when they hit the ball to shortstop? I am. I am nervous right now, you know, and some brilliant plays, notwithstanding. Made a brilliant play last night. Really, really tough play. But those routine, you give up a run here, you give up a run there, is brutal, and you cannot have it in the postseason. So your defense is already suffering with Crony at second because he's not at first, right? And I think Crony's made some good plays. Crony's better defensively at first than he is at second, I think. Hassan Kim at second makes a little bit of sense to me. I don't know. I don't know what they do. And it's all dependent on health. And a bench piece, fine. Is he a defensive replacement late in the game? I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. What does he bring with the bat? Not as much as Donovan Solano has the capability of bringing. I know he's on a little bit of a cold snap right now, but I mean, I tend to just kind of leave it as it is right now. Unless he's like, I'm 100%, I'm ready to go. You know, I just don't know. I don't know that you put him back at short immediately.
Hold that, because I got some thoughts on that. But I want Craig to give his thoughts on what he'd do with Ka-Sung Kim if he comes back here.
I just don't know that they're going to bring him back. I think it's a real complicator to this team, to the lineup dynamic, and to the defensive dynamic as well. You guys were chatting about this a little bit as I was driving into work. Like, I was trying to piece it out, because right now they got a 28-man roster.
Yeah.
When you cut it down, and you count all the guys, and you're like, of course we're going to keep Peralta. If you're going to – Peralta, Wade, Lockridge would be the bench. You have to cut one of those guys to put Kim on the team. So are you going to cut Peralta for Kim?
No.
Are you going to cut Tyler Wade, who's been there since day one?
Yes.
For Kim?
Yes.
I guess.
Probably.
Now.
Probably.
Now.
Brutal. Just.
Do you feel.
Brutal.
Sorry, pal.
Do you feel more or less comfortable in a playoff at bat or a playoff pinch running situation with Kim out there versus Wade?
AB. Kim, better with Kim.
I mean, maybe base like running. Base running Wade slightly, but not big enough.
Not big enough to make me
to overcome the difference in the potential. And this is the point that I would, because we've been talking mostly like defense and keeping Xander comfortable and where Kim could be most valuable. Padres have quietly, half of their team has started struggling offensively, including Donovan Solano.
Yes.
Jake looking a little bit better, but had a really ragged, you know, last couple
terrible
of months.
Terrible September, yeah.
Even Manny's cooled off a little bit. Arise has cooled off. Hassan Kim, while he's been dealing with the shoulder, as Wood said, he's been swinging.
Violently.
And while he has not had a great offensive season, you don't have to have a good offensive season to have a good offensive playoffs. And we've seen a Hassan Kim, a version of him, that is a top 10 MVP vote-getting player. And
you know Tyler Wade is not going to have a hot postseason.
But
he's not.
Hassan Kim could get hot enough where he actually is a difference maker offensively for you in the postseason. Is it likely? Probably not. Would you like to have that opportunity, though, of, you know, Grisham got hot. Hassan Kim could easily get hot and be someone that helps you win a World Series, even with his bat. And
I
think
Solano's got a much better chance of getting hot.
Probably.
Than Hassan Kim,
probably.
Who can't handle 97.
Need Hassan Kim to get in by the Arizona series then for that to happen?
That would be helpful.
Yeah.
That would be helpful.
Yeah, I need to see something.
That's fair. Kim. Just not coming in cold from the complex, running
when
out.
When did he go down? Mid-August? Early August?
Late. It was August 25th.
August 25th. Okay. So, I mean, that's a whole month plus of being cold. That's certainly a wrinkle.
There's also the, and I don't totally understand it, but there is the Hassan Kim vibes of the energy and the love that he brings to that team, that you kind of inject that at a time when, I know the playoffs, everyone's got high vibes, but come on, overcharge them, bring back that love.
Tyler Wade brings
has.
That too, though, and
he does,
he's beloved.
He
he's a guy in the clubhouse that speaks.
Yeah.
He is a speaker. In the San Diego Padres clubhouse.
Maybe Lockridge. I know everyone says, oh, he's got it locked up because he stole two bases and he's a good defender. Maybe he does. Maybe he doesn't. But maybe you keep Tyler Wade for that instead of
Lockridge. Is certainly the easiest one. Like, that's the easiest
one. That's the easiest one to say.
Okay, but if there's one player in the outfield that you might be a little worried about in the ninth inning of a clinching playoff game, it's the guy who just made two incredible diving catches on Tuesday night. And Brandon Lockridge is indisputably a better option than Wade going into the outfield in that situation. So I do see the value of keeping Lockridge. That's why I kind of keep falling on the, well, if he's out, they can just keep saying he's still hurt.
How about this? Expanded playoff rosters for everybody.
Embarrassment of riches.
An embarrassment of riches. 30 guys.
I believe you still need 13 pitchers and 13 position players.
Do you have to whack it up like that?
I feel like the Padres need 13 pitchers, but let's talk about the pitchers while we're on this, because they're going to have to make a decision as well. I mean, you don't necessarily need Alec Jacob. Wandy Peralta got big outs, at the end of the game in a one-run game yesterday. He has playoff experience. Sean Reynolds, if he's healthy, has an electric arm.
Of course.
What do you do, Annie, with the back of the Padres bullpen in your roster decisions postseason?
They get to reset it before every...
Yes, they do.
So I think that that's how you play it, right? I think that you look at who you're facing, who's the opponent. The three-game series is going to be a lot different to me than the five-game series. It's going to be a lot different if they make it to a seven-game series, right? So I think Sean Reynolds is more dominant, has more of a presence on the mound, maybe obviously has a heat. But, yeah, I don't. You know, Alec Jacob has done well for them.
Craig, can we kind of agree? We'll see Yuki Matsui next season, where hopefully he's a little more acclimated. Could be an important part of the bullpen in 2025, but we may not see him again in 2024.
No, simplest move that you make is you leave Yuki off the postseason roster and you put Martin Perez in that bullpen spot where he can be an extra innings weapon for you.
That was a huge point. AJ Casville made it that I hadn't even thought of. With no extra runner, Manfred runner, you need someone who can eat four innings for a 13-14
game. Yeah, you keep Martin Perez
in the postseason in case you
extra innings
one of those
can go
games.
15 innings.
Yeah. They can throw up some zeros in extra innings need in the regular season. Yeah. But Martin Perez would be the perfect guy
won
for
a World
extra
Series
innings.
Last year.
He's a no-brainer.
Come out of the bullpen before.
He'll give you four
left-handed pitcher
quality innings. Yeah.
To the second one, I'd love to see Sean Reynolds activated this weekend and to pitch in Arizona, because I need to see it again. He's a converted infielder who's never even touched the playoffs. If he comes walking out of the playoff bullpen, I'm going to be scared you know whatless.
Yeah.
And honestly, I will be the same with Jacob, because he's got lesser stuff. So I need to see it from Reynolds. Otherwise, honestly, in the first round, I would be fine with carrying neither of those guys and adding Kim Wade and Lockridge.
If you end up facing the Dodgers, do you try to get Tom Cosgrove back just for Shohei Ohtani?
No.
Okay, no. Paul, any thoughts on the bullpen?
I agree with everything that was just said.
Perfect.
Yuki.
He's not the best round table training replacement for nothing. Folks.
I agree.
All right, Paul, time for your very first seventh inning stretch of our roundtable. I think this is a good question for Paulie especially, but all of us really. I want to thank again Roundtable for being the sponsor all season long. Roundtable was the place I went to as a kid for pizza and to play arcade console games, the put the quarter in game. So the question for the seventh inning stretch, what was your favorite, like, have to put the quarter in game that you played growing up at the arcade?
Oh, man. Go ahead,
Paulie.
We had Godfather's Pizza in Burien, Washington.
This is Roundtable Pizza.
And at the redacted pizza place, they had a Simpsons game that was really fun, but I think my all-time favorite arcade game was Area 51, where you had the plastic guns and the aliens or whatever. You're going through it. That was, you could play with a partner or with a friend. It was so much fun.
I am of the age that arcade games were our video games.
Yes. Didn't have any
until I was
options.
Until I was like in fourth or fifth grade when home consoles first came to be. So this is near and dear to my heart. We had a pizza place, a local pizza place that was a short bike ride away from my house, and tell you what, RBI Baseball was my favorite, playing the old, you know, they would have all these old timers. I think it was Rube Waddell on the Giants. I'd pick him because he had this crazy screwball, and I could always strike out my buddies with that pitch.
Woods?
I remember when Top Gun came out. I don't know if they called it Top Gun, but
were you just going to the arcade to meet girls, or were
I did. I mean, it was at the mall, and there were a lot of girls there. But we loved video games. You get a, you know, trough of quarters, and your pockets are so full, and there was a game, and you actually got in, and it had the joystick, and it would turn, and you could do the barrel roll. And I can't remember for the life of me what it was. I want to say it was like a ripoff of Top Gun or something, but it was, you're in the F-14 flying it.
That Top was, Flight.
Yeah, something like that. It was great. And then Silent Scope. Remember Silent Scope?
I do remember that.
It was incredible. You were a sniper, and it was just like, you had the scope and everything. It was a brilliant game. But the old school games, I mean, obviously, like Donkey Kong, Pac-Man, I always hated it. It was always too stressful for me. I was too anxiety-ridden. Those ghosts chasing you, trying to get the strawberry. No thanks.
Annie, were you a video game player at the arcades
at all? Mine isn't a video game, but when I was a kid, we went through many pockets of being poor in our household, and when we moved into a rental, we didn't have any couches or any furniture, but my dad did some work at Chuck E. Cheese, and when they closed, they sent him home. They let him take two skee-ball machines and some picnic tables. So we had no couches, no furniture, no dining table or anything, but we had the skee-ball machines and the picnic tables, and we were kids, and me and my sister, you know, so I got really good at skee-ball during that time, and then we would go play in high school and stuff, and
just
people.
Hustle people,
just hustle people. Yeah. So it was
That's
a good time.
Incredible. So I get it in the one, the top left.
The top, yeah.
You mentioned my choice, Woods. I was going to pick Donkey Kong because I like games where you could get past a level and then it would up the difficulty, and like you're trying to keep that quarter alive as long as possible.
We know you
without dying. Yeah, because you know you want to save as much money as possible. But Pac-Man is an interesting choice. Not the one where you stood up, but remember when they had the one that was the flat and you get to sit at the
tabletop.
At the table.
Your pizza was over
and
here.
Yeah, and you had your pizza on the flat.
It was great.
Pac-Man was always a lot of fun to get to sit in one of those games. All right, we're bringing back the roundtable draft today as well here on our final regular season roundtable. Remember the rules? You cannot pick something that has already been chosen, just like a regular draft. The order this week is reverse alphabetical order by last name. So, Woods, you have the first selection in today's roundtable draft. And, of course, it is focused on the postseason. Padres have played themselves over the
last pick. Dang it.
The Padres have played themselves into being, I think everyone would agree, legitimate World Series contenders.
Yep.
So the question on the draft is, which team presents the biggest obstacle to the Padres winning the World Series now in 2024? Could be National, could be American League. Which team in your mind might be the worst matchup, the one you don't want to face, the biggest obstacle to the Padres winning the whole thing, the World Series?
The Padres.
Ooh.
Oh, you son of a gun.
Really?
Yeah.
They play their
game. That's a bit of an arrogant answer.
It is.
As well.
It is. They play their game. They can beat any of those teams. They can. They have. They will. Listen. You know, you've got a lineup that's as deep as it's ever been. It's as deep as anybody else's. If they play clean baseball and their bullpen does what they're capable of doing, and their starters give them, you know, five, they're their own worst enemy right now, honestly.
All right, Reindl, you are next up in reverse alphabetical order.
Hey, thank you for leaving the field for me.
You're welcome.
I'm going to go with a National League team because, honestly, I mean, everybody's going to be a good team in the playoffs, but the American League does not scare me as much as maybe it should. I don't know. I'm going to go with the Philadelphia Phillies.
Sure.
That's the team that knocked you out in 22. That's the team that has major star power, home run threats up and down the lineup, great pitching, but it's personal. Like, that's the team, not the Dodgers. That's the team that you need to beat. And I don't know how the playoffs are going to shake out, if they would see them in the DS or the NLCS, but I think right now my bar is got to win a pennant, get to the World Series. After that, you know, we'll see what happens. But I do think that the Phillies are probably the team that you have some history with. They play everybody tough. That's the team that I want to see them take the next level and get past.
It does mean you're a next level team if you beat a team like the Phillies. You're next level. Like you absolutely
in a series. Like yeah.
Higgins sneaks just in front of Heilbrunn for the next pick. I thought the Phillies was a good selection. It was probably
reverse
alphabetical order. I was probably going to take the Phillies with Nola and Wheeler both being pitchers that give the Padres in particular a lot of trouble, so I think that's a really good answer, and I kind of agreed with you on the American League. However, if we're really talking about winning the World Series, and it comes down to it, maybe they won't ever have to face him, but having to go up against Judge and Soto in a potential World Series and having to go back to Yankee Stadium, just like in 1998, where the world's probably going to be against you for the most part in a series like that.
Different Yankee Stadium, though, altogether.
Yeah, but it might, to me, be the biggest obstacle, the final boss, just like in an arcade video game that you got to get past, and having to face the guy you traded away. What unbelievable storylines that would be. Soto,
I just don't think they make it. That's the thing.
I don't know that they do either, but if they are there, they would be a pretty big obstacle to stand in the way of the Padres finally.
Well, whoever's there, it's going to be a big obstacle.
Yeah, sure.
You don't just cruise into the World Series and or luck your way into
someone's playing well at that point if they've gotten to the World Series. Judge is scary. Soto is scary. I mean, that's I'm going to pick the Yankees. Annie?
These are all very good answers. I'm going to invoke the spirit of Chris Ello and ride your coattails a little bit and say baseball. Just
baseball.
Going through getting into a cold stretch, you know, out of nowhere, an injury popping up out of nowhere, just weird baseball-y things, you know, weird errors, a piece of equipment malfunctioning. Baseball. I think baseball will be, because I agree, I think they can beat, I think they have a chance to beat any team.
Craig's going to fight you the next 3 hours on your show.
This entire situation is a trap. The last time you trapped me, it's been held against me on every show. Every show.
Which one?
Somebody in the chat says, oh, well, you're a Diamondbacks lover because you picked the Diamondbacks and you think the Diamondbacks are going to win.
It's a trap.
And then half the panel cheats. You cheated and you cheated. You both cheated. You did not follow the prompt.
All right,
You're a cheater and you're a cheater.
I'll take the Dodgers.
I'm cheating too. The Angels. I am scared of the Angels, Ben. Okay, come at me, folks. Come at me. I'm scared of the Angels, okay? Game.
I'll do the Dodgers. I'll change mine. Yeah,
thank you, Woods. Someone had to pick
them. I'll do
the
Mets.
Yeah, there you go. The Mets. You happy now?
Yeah, I'm happy.
Please.
For goodness sakes. Johnny's setting me up so I can spend the next week here. Oh, there's the Dodger lover again. There's a guy who picked the Dodgers. I guess you better have a Dodger fan in the mid-bay.
Oh, I've been living it for 7 years,
Angels.
Greg. There's a Dave Roberts soundbite, but I will never escape.
I'm not going to take it. Not taking it. Not taking that bullet.
There's some tension.
I think, honestly, every team that's in the playoffs, you are your own worst enemy. Yeah. If you got there for a reason, and if you pitch like you did to get there, and you hit
the Padres too, then
or not overthinking yet. Things. I honestly didn't hear. I missed it. If you said a team, I thought it was like a generality.
Okay.
But I'll go with Mets.
Mets.
Yeah,
they're scary.
But I think overthinking, even strategizing. Who knows? Any of that could ruin you.
Yeah, the Braves are scary. By the way,
they are.
Chris Sale pitch. They would
Schwellen, Bach.
They would scare me.
You can make an argument for literally every team.
Every team. That's why they have the playoffs. Every one of those teams could win the World Series.
I'll go with, oh, my God.
I love our team. I think our team is great.
Who knew that after 6 months of the roundtable, it was going to end in a giant pizza-throwing food fight brawl between the five of us left on this panel?
And Ello just skates by. Tony just skates by. No, yeah. I wasn't taking that Dodger bullet. No, wasn't doing it.
What was yours?
I picked the Yankees.
Way in the future.
Yeah, a little bit.
What, we didn't even say the Brewers.
No, didn't say the Brewers. Didn't say the Astros.
I don't know why the Brewers don't scare
Guardians.
Anyone.
Guardians with Emmanuel Clase closing every game at 103 mile an hour cutter.
Our team's really good.
Well, the Padres have handled most of these teams over the course of the season. They won the series against the Guardians. They won the season series against the Brewers. They have handled playoff teams quite well. And honestly, if you want the fake answer from me, it's up. Math is always the hardest thing to beat in a postseason. Like an NCAA tournament, there are 12 teams, and only one of them is going to win the World Series.
And honestly, Annie's right, too. You're right.
Dumb baseball.
Two out of three. White Sox could beat the Yankees. Two out of three.
And the Braves set up well for a two out of three, but do they set up well for a five?
And
I made the
point yesterday. If you won three out of every four series all year long, you'd probably be right around 100 win team, best team in baseball. You win three out of four series in the playoffs, you know what you are?
Home.
Loser. You're home.
Golf
you have
bang.
To win
You're
all
golfing.
Four. Right. You have to win all four series to win the World Series, or if you get a bye three. But That's still,
it doesn't
there's
matter.
No margin for error. And it's set up where 11 of the teams will be eliminated, no matter how good they are playing. There could be three teams that are playing out of their mind great baseball. Two of them, at least, will not win the World Series at the end. It's why it's so hard. It's why the Padres, one of the reasons, they don't have one. It's really, really hard to do it. And that is the really biggest challenge to overcome in any postseason.
It's also true. And this is going to be a blast. And here's the other thing.
You guys ready for this?
I mean, no, clearly not.
We're already cannibalizing each other.
Right? It's really all your fault, Ben. I mean,
it always is.
It's you who set the trap. I mean, for goodness sakes, these guys just jumped over it. They're smart, but I had to call them out. No, this is why baseball playoffs. Billy Beane was right, okay? And he's still right. Like, the playoffs are... It's not a true representation. The regular season is a true representation because here's something I was just thinking about today. Like, all year, what do we say to everybody? Like, it's one game, it's one series, it's one month, it's one half. Don't overreact. The game is long. It takes a long time. Everybody overreacts every game now. If Manny Machado goes 0-for-4 with four strikeouts in game one, he's a loser who didn't show up and he had a terrible year and blah, 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 blah. And contrastingly, if, Elias Diaz hits two doubles in game one, he's the greatest thing ever. So, you know, the randomness of this sport writ small means that we need to try and find a way to exalt our players, love our team, enjoy the experience, and accept the result, whatever the result might be.
Yeah, no question. It's the beauty of that game is that, you know, you may take your foot off the gas for the 8 and 9 hole hitter who comes through and has a huge... I mean, think about Rosario in the postseason. Think about the Shane Spencers of the world. Think about the Scott Brosius of
Eckstein.
The world. David Eckstein. All of these, David Freese. I mean, just like you look at Stephen Pierce, you're like, you're joking. This guy is locked in. He got hot for 2 weeks. World Series champion, World Series MVP. And I love that about baseball.
But
I love that because it's not just, I've got Tom Brady and I've got the greatest receivers and I've got the best running back. It's no, I got 9 and I play great defense and I pitch well and I got a little lucky. And our 9-hole hitter came through, got a bunt down, whatever it may be. That's what I love.
But there are also years where really good and deep teams just play really good and good baseball for a month, and they win the World Series.
Yeah.
You know, there's sometimes the World Series champion pretty legitimate as well. So you can't just say it's a crapshoot, it's a coin flip. You have to go out and do it. And some teams, you know, I'd rather have the deeper team with the better lineup and the better pitching staff.
It almost
all things being equal.
Almost guarantees you nothing, though.
Rangers won last year.
Right, Rangers won. Right.
Last year was not one of those years, I don't think.
Yeah, no, it really wasn't.
See, there are years like that, but not every year. So we'll find out what kind of year this is. After a few threats by Stephen Woods and foot stomping, I believe he did agree to continue roundtabling as long as the Padres are alive.
I don't
remember agreeing to that with Adam?
Can you wait for the next week's 1-1 game 3 round?
Check local listings, but we will keep you informed as to any future roundtable events involving all of us. Paulie, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I'm signing off. Good to be with you guys all season.
We'll see you next
Woods is ready to contract.
Talk to my agents.
If it was up to Adam, we'd have an off-season roundtable every week.
It would never end.
Thanks to all of our crew that helped us put it together. You know, Braden's usually in the studio. Adam, JR is here today. Mike, who's having a grandkid today. Congratulations to him and everyone who's helped out all season long. That's it for us. For Annie, for Woodsy, for Craig, for Paul, I'm Ben. Annie and Elston coming up next live here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.